We sit glued to the TV set all night
and every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of...
Hello, and welcome to TV Times 3, episode number 103. I'm Emery from MyTakeOnTV.com.
I'm Jason the TVaholic from TVaholic.com, and this week we have joining us...
This is Tiffany Vogt from the TV Addict.
Yay, the TV Addict. That's where I got my start, everybody. So we're all, everybody's connected in this blogosphere. So welcome, Tiffany. Glad to have you along.
Is that the 1 degree of separation?
Yes, the 1 degree of separation between me and Tiffany. We both wrote for the TV Addict.
Great, so, site. Have a lot of fun writing for it.
Yes, I used to have a lot of fun too, and I love Daniel, so shout out to Daniel. All right, so jumping right in, there's a lot of news things that you've probably seen going around online this week. The Killing, we talked a little bit about the Killing finale, the actual finale, our feelings on the finale, but I feel like the finale is, the aftermath of the finale has taken on a mind of its own. Because I was upset and a lot of people were upset, but I didn't expect the anger that really came out of it.
Well, not just that, but the response back in interviews from the creator of the show and... Like, I think even, like, the network president came out and said something about it, and it was, like, all kinds of stuff. But the thing is none of them seem to get it. Their whole marketing plan and everything around the show all pointed to you were going to get an answer to this question. And so their idea that we never promised you that just seems really weird.
Do you think they would actually give us the answer if it hadn't been picked up?
Yeah, see, I don't know. That's an interesting
thing.
No, I don't think
they would have.
I thought I saw someplace somebody talk about how they may have filmed multiple endings so that they could have, you know, ended it one way. But the way that the interviews and stuff go down, it sounds like this is the way it was planned to end, whether it would have got picked up for another season or not. And if that's the case, that would have been really...
Yeah, that would have been horrible. I mean, and maybe they're just saying for the interviews now that, like, this is how it would have ended. Like, they're just saying that now. But I feel like they really weren't going to add anything to it. Maybe they would have come out in interviews afterwards and say, like, okay, yes, because we didn't get picked up, here's what would have happened and here's who would have been the killer.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of thought people were kind of overreacting given it was serial television, and this is the big premise. Sometimes they do not solve the mysteries at the end of each season.
Right.
Expectations might have been a little bit false to themselves. I wasn't expecting the answer because I had heard about the pickup, and I thought, oh, good, they'll tell me next season.
See, I didn't go in thinking they wouldn't. I don't know.
The tagline of the show being Who Killed Rosie Larson made it point to that. While they want to tell you that the show was all these other things, which it was a character study of what happens in all these different people's lives around this murder. Like, what happens to the immediate family? What happens in the lives of the detectives that have to investigate these types of things that happen? And while it is an exploration of all of those, you tag it with something else as a tagline Who Killed Rosie Larson. And the thing that always gets me is, like, the advertising breaks are always about come to the website and say who you think is, and track and see each week who you think everybody thinks is the killer and stuff like that. And when you've got all that stuff running around it, to not pay that off at the end just seemed to me they went the wrong direction there a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, I understand it.
Storytelling.
Well, I understand it from the storytelling sort of point of view. It just, from the way that the show came off, it just seemed like it wasn't going that direction. Like, I equate it to something like Damages, where Damages was built to be something over the course of 13 episodes, and you didn't get a definite everything that happened, but of the main case that was being, that the story was taking place around, you've got an end to that. And so you didn't get, like, an ending to anything in this. You know, there was a... That was the... I don't know. But I think we should end talking about it.
We're giving it more weight than it needs. So it's not really news, but we also want to talk a little bit about Game of Thrones, not in prime time, just because it's already aired and everybody's kind of watched it, but Ray doesn't watch it, so we didn't want to spoil anything for her when she was actually on the show last week. So I've read A Song of Fire and Ice, so I knew it was coming, but still, like, it's still like, oh, maybe I thought they would change something. Maybe I thought that they wouldn't follow the books and my favorite character wouldn't be buried or burned alive, not alive, burned, and, you know, that these dragons really wouldn't appear. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. But still, it was still shocking to watch a finale, even though I knew what was going to happen.
Have you read the books, Tiffany?
I have not read the books, no.
Okay, so you're in the same place as me as watching, as having no idea about anything that's happening.
Yeah, I'm just watching it unfold and I'm like, oh, okay.
I loved it. I don't know.
I like to be surprised, though.
I'm interested in they seem to be, not 100%, but like, say 95% apparently following the books.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an interesting thing just in building something off of a book, where a lot of TV shows, and because TV show is a different medium than a book and you do things differently to work well within your medium, is how a lot of times you'd start with a basic premise and some of the things that have taken place in the stories take place. But overall, you sort of go off in your own direction sometimes.
Right.
And so this one being from people that have read the books, hearing that they are staying pretty faithful to it is kind of interesting to me.
And the books are very rich and the books are very detailed. So, like, they lend themselves to being just adapted almost virtually word for word. Plus, when you have the writer of the book actually doing the writing of the show, he doesn't need to think up two different stories because it would take forever because he takes forever to write things.
I think it's smart. It was a successful series as a book, and they decided to kind of follow it very closely. So it honors the fans who like the book as well as drawing in the fans who are going to watch it from the television perspective.
Mm-hmm.
When they deviate, you create two different audiences, and it just upsets one or the other.
Right, and exactly. And the way that they're doing this, the things that upset people in the books are upsetting people on TV. So, like, it's having the same reaction, and you're not kind of pitting two groups of people against each other, saying no, the way they did this in the books was the way, like, was much better than the way they did it on TV. I think the only real difference we're seeing is a lot of the ages of the kids are being aged up, because some of the things they do with the characters in the book, you know, or on TV, you probably couldn't do if they were really 13 years old. Right, exactly. Like aging up Danny and all that. So I don't know. I have not read the next book, and I'm pretty sure, you know, season 2 is going to be based on the next book, so I will probably read that, obviously, before it starts. I was not as on board. I started reading the book, actually, after the premiere, so I hadn't read it before the season started, and I was not as on board, but I was, you know, Jace was like, read the books. The books are really good, so I read the book, and then suddenly I was much more interested in the series, and it did not disappoint. So, there you have it. There's some finale thoughts.
Smart show. I think they're clever in the way that they're adapting it and how they're drawing in all these different audiences this way, and they're making it part of, like, the global conversation. Even with Up Against the Killing, which aired its finale the same night, I think Game of Thrones was not overshadowed, and it still had that big moment of surprise and excitement, and oh my god, I can't wait for the next season. That's smart.
It is, because, and in a way, oh my god, I can't wait for the next season. They're excited about it, not, oh my god, I can't wait for the next season so I can decide if I really am going to keep with a show that didn't give me the answers that I wanted in the first season. So it's like, it kind of won the night with the way that it was plotted perfectly, it ended perfectly where it needed to. It was just, pacing was great, and I think I can't wait for season 2. So we want to talk a little bit about the Critics' Choice Awards. And now, I don't even know why the Critics' Choice Awards were kind of created. I don't even know where they come from and who necessarily are these critics. Because some people have gone on at length about how they're not valid, but I don't care. A lot of the shows I wanted nominated were, so it counts to me. And got some good good wins out of it. You know, some were old, you know, old hat you kind of expected to see win, but it was nice to see, like, John Noble pick up his award. And and Margot Martindale deserved this.
Yes.
She deserves so much for what she's done with Justified, and which I finally got caught up on, and I'm finally in the Margot Martindale train, but she's amazing, and she deserves better next season, so hopefully she gets a bigger part on her show, but spoiler alert, but it was nice to see her win, and she was so surprised that she won, and Busy Phillips winning. Like, she's hysterical on Cougar Town, and maybe she would never win, like, she would never win another, you know, I don't think she would win necessarily an Emmy, because there's too many kind of past Emmy nominees or past Emmy darlings or whatever that'll be nominated for the supporting area, but it's nice that these people are getting recognition.
Oh, yeah, John Noble, my God, that was amazing.
It's a long time coming. That man is amazing.
I don't exactly know where these came from either, but it's nice to see, again, some of these names that are not always recognized on the Emmy list being brought to light. So that was kind of...
I mean, for these hold more weight to me than, like, the People's Choice Awards, because, let's be honest, like, People's Choice Awards, fans of The Vampire Diaries are going to go... Not that I'm a fan of The Vampire Diaries, too. Like, I'm not saying anything negative about them, but they're going to kind of band together more than fans of, like, Friday Night Lights would. That's just the nature of an award show like that. So I don't know that that's necessarily a true representation, but these are people that, like, have championed these actors through their critiques or their, you know, their write-ups on the shows, and it's nice to hear more about the people that we don't always get to hear about.
Sure, maybe there's that.
So, we're all going to Comic-Con, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I haven't got my airline tickets yet,
You have everything except a flight, right?
So. I have my list, I have my room, I have my bunk mate for the week, and now all I need is to get there via an airplane.
Okay, so we'll figure that out. Running specials of $40 each way. Didn't you jump on that?
Not from me. They're not $40 each way. Mine are a little, I'm at the 500 round trip point right now, but I'll get there. I'll be there, people. If I have to, I don't know, rob a bank, you'll see me in Comic-Con. And here's what else you see.
Unless she gets caught robbing the bank, then.
Yeah, then I'll be in jail. But for now, I've got a plan.
Wait till after Comic-Con to rob the bank.
Well, then how am I getting to Comic-Con?
Well,
I don't want to invest in beforehand.
You put it on a credit card, and then you rob the bank to pay off the credit card. That's
exactly. So I'm probably going to be in jail in August, but I'll be at Comic-Con.
Woohoo!
A couple of interesting kind of screening announcements came out. You kind of expected a couple. You know, Warner Brothers always does the pilot screenings the first night. Is it Wednesday night, or do they do it Thursday night?
Wednesday.
Yeah. They do new screenings of their new shows. You'll see Alcatraz, you'll see Person of Interest, The Secret Circle. But what surprised me, and I think surprised a lot of people, is that the comic publishers behind Lock and Key, which was a pilot from Josh Friedman that did not get picked up for Fox, is going to screen. Like, we're going to see a pilot that didn't get picked up and won't air. And I kind of understand, like, doing that and how the comic publishers really went for it and were like, you know what, it would be great. We have comics coming out. Why not put this together? But does anything come out of this? Not, I mean, it's just going to be there for people to preview, right?
Yeah, they're just going to watch it. It's just
and then...
created.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a big tease, though, because you're going to love it, and then you're going to go, why didn't they make that series?
Yeah, and then poor Fox, who I think Fox kind of stepped out of the box a little bit this year, you know, they didn't step out of the box enough to pick up this show. And
yeah,
then
they'll get killed for killing somebody's favorite show before it was ever even a show.
And perhaps I might suggest you don't watch Lock and Key and Alcatraz in the same weekend. I don't know.
I heard they loved the pilot at Fox. They just had nowhere on their broadcast schedule to stick it.
And it was going to be hard to market. I mean, it's the kind of show that it would kind of take a big marketing under like a big campaign to make it happen. And they already have such a big campaign going for Terra Nova that you're right. Like, there's just nowhere on the network with the X Factor, with all of their marketing dollars basically going to those two shows. Lock and Key just kind of got lost in the shuffle. So it'll be interesting to kind of hear how people react, because it's going to be primarily the comic people, you know, the people that are interested in the Lock and Key comic or graphic novels or whatever they are, I'm not sure, are going to be the ones seeing the show. So you get to kind of see how they translated it and if it held up. And that's going to be interesting to see, too, how Josh did with it.
He probably did a fine job, and we're going to be excited that it won't be now a show.
and suddenly, if I'm, and this is kind of news, suddenly I'm interested in The Finder. Like, I was, because I do like George Stultz, and Or is it Jeff Stoltz? Which one's the guy? George is his brother. Jeff is the one that's the finder, right?
Yeah.
I always get them confused. Even though George has the personality of a stick, Jeff is the one that's on the finder. Okay. I'm looking forward to it, and now Josh Friedman's involved, and, like, my interest is, like, doubled. So that's exciting. What else is going on at Comic-Con?
When you get better creative minds behind a show, that suddenly it helps a lot when they do that, because you know that that with creative energy is going to add to the quality of it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I mean, you know the history, and that's also why I'm kind of excited about the people that Glee is bringing on. Glee is bringing on actual writers, if we're being honest, actual writers for the show this year. Like, Allie Adler's joining the cast, and everybody loves Allie, and, you know, I'm really excited for John Michael Hitchcock to be there, because he's one of my favorites, and he's been on the show, so he kind of knows the ins and outs of it. I think it's going to be really good for Glee to have four actual writers in the writer's room that know what they're doing. I mean, not to say that Ryan Murphy doesn't know what he's doing, but he doesn't. At least not in this genre anymore.
He's got fractured interests. He's trying to launch another television show. He just cannot focus on the one he had before when he's got all these other things he's trying to maintain as well.
Exactly. And then Ian and the third guy, who I can never remember, they're kind of just, they were never really prepared to take on as much as they need to take on. So it's going to be really good for them. So a couple panel announcements. I mean, a lot of stuff is coming out. We're starting to hear almost every network or cable network has put out their lists now for Comic-Con. It'd be nice to see Torchwood from Starz there. Mekhi Phifer, Bill Pullman. That's crazy. I'm so excited. And podcast listeners will know that I'm thrilled that Haven is having a panel. And not necessarily because I love the show. I mean, I like the show. And as the season went on, like,
I'm very excited.
but everybody knows that I love Eric freaking Balfour beyond words. Like, I love Eric Balfour so much. And I don't know why. I just do. But the fact that he's going to be there for his show and not just for some movie he's doing that's plastered all over my hotel, I'm just very excited. I just love him. So there's that.
Well, his enthusiasm for the show he works on is kind of infectious. He's on Twitter.
It really is.
Fun.
And the show, like, to me, it really was something that I went back every week, and every week there was just something more. I was like, okay. And by the season finale, it's like, I really do hope we get a second season, and I'm really glad that we have one now.
Have you seen the pilot, or I should say the premiere episode for the second season yet?
I started it, but then I was too tired, so I haven't finished it. But from the beginning of it, I'm already like, okay, I'm glad it's back. I'm glad I'm getting a second season.
Setting up a lot more mysteries. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You'll be even more excited when you get to the end of that episode.
Oh, heavens. now I'm going to be like, hey, Dave, I can't come to your birthday dinner.
I got to see how Haven ends.
He'll understand. My love for Eric freaking Balfour comes before him. So, I mean, nothing that would shock people. I think about what's coming to Comic-Con, what isn't. I mean, is there anything not going that surprises people?
White collar,
yeah.
I'm a little surprised by that because they were there last year. They were well received. They're not coming. Same thing with Burn Notice. They were there the last couple of years there, and they were very well received with Bruce Campbell, and they're again not coming this year. It's kind of a huge surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad Sykes coming, and I'm glad, like, Covert Affairs, I think, can use the exposure, but it is kind of surprising for a show like White Collar. And I mean, it kind of has the spy feel to it. I don't know.
I mean, I can see White Collar not coming. I mean, it's sort of one of those where it doesn't exactly totally fit.
Like, they were coming because other USA shows were coming, so they figured they'd bring them all, but
the only reason Burn Notice was ever there is because Bruce Campbell's in it.
Right.
Yeah, and he rocks.
That one's sort of surprising that one, for some reason, is not coming back, because that always seems to do, you know, that's always seems to be well-received. And it seems like that would be a good, you have that and Covert Affairs, like, back-to-back or something like that, but...
Right. I wonder if it was shooting or anything like that, because they're both back to work, but that's never seemed to stop them before, so that is surprising. But, I mean, there was nothing else that... I mean, you know, there's always the usual, like, why is Glee there and things like that, but at this point...
it's a live-action cartoon.
Well, at this point, I think that Comic-Con is becoming much more about...
Pop culture con.
Pop culture con versus... necessarily being about the comics. And maybe then there needs to be a separate TV con in San Diego specifically for more of the networks to bring more of their shows. But nothing else really surprised me.
Yeah, I think usually it's the there'll be a handful of shows that you're just like, wait, what? How does that fit in sort of the genre of things of, you know, sci-fi and comic books or, you know, superheroes and things of that nature that you think of with Comic-Con.
Right.
Yeah, but things like Big Bang Theory and Glee, they've broken the stereotype of what Comic-Con's about.
So right, exactly.
See those shows at Comic-Con. So now they're hopeful and they're anticipating that shows like Big Bang Theory and Glee will be there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Big Bang Theory has always made sense because they would, you know, their characters would have been there anyways.
Right.
Yeah, but what about Glee? Glee's a musical. It has nothing to do with science fiction. I mean, it is a little fantasy based.
Right.
But it's extraordinarily popular with the Geek Squad community, supposedly. They all show up. They all try to wait hours in line. It's amazing. I mean, Cap was there last year. That's not a Geek Squad kind of show, even though Nathan Fillion stars in it. He's from Firefly. But again, people are making hours and waiting in line for hours just for the opportunity to be in them. It's pretty exciting to see these non-genre shows actually being so well received.
Here's what I want to talk about, Hall H. So there's not a lot of movie studios coming this year. Really happy that Supernatural is finally in something bigger. I mean, they were in six forever, and I don't even think they ever got a Ballroom 20, and now they're jumping right to Hall H, which for them, I think will work. And I think that enough people are there to try and see a little bit of Jared and Jensen and Misha that Hall H will work for them. What I'm confused about is why Sonny and Sons are in Hall H. Both two of my favorite shows, but they will like pale in comparison to other things that fill Hall H.
Maybe because that was available.
I guess. I mean, it makes sense because there's a lot of stuff that was taken, but I worry for them because they're going to be like, oh, look, we only filled a quarter of the room, but it's the same amount of people that would have been in Ballroom 20, but now they're not because we're in, I don't know. I love them both.
Well, maybe
there.
They're hoping to siphon off some crowds that are already sitting in the room to be in a panel later on.
Right. That's true. They do need to start doing that a little better. Ron Perlman's a huge draw. Ron Perlman's huge, and maybe some Hellboy fans will get in there. And I guess Sonny is getting much more popular. I just thought it was an interesting choice. I was very surprised when I saw that. But that's... So Comic-Con's going to be fun. We look forward to that every year.
Although it might give me reason to actually go in Hall 8.
Right. I've never been in Hall 8. It should be pointed out.
Me either.
So that's it's awesome in there. The world unto itself.
Let's just hope nobody gets stabbed this year.
Oh, right. With a pen. I'm really worried about people with a pen this year. I'm not going to worry about that at all.
So let's move on a little bit in the news here. I don't know much about this. I've just seen kind of Nathan tweeting about it. What's the Serenity screening for Equality Now? Like, what? When is that? Like, are they doing it in multiple cities? Like, what's the deal
every
with
year
that?
For Joss Whedon's birthday? Joss loved the Equality Now. He was a really big supporter of it. So every year for his birthday, they do special screenings around the country in different cities in honor of recognizing the one charity Joss would like to have everybody in the world pay more attention to. And what's really nice is if you do go to the screening in Los Angeles, Josh usually shows up. So they announced early that he'd be there this year with bringing some special guests like Felicia Day. The surprise guest, of course, was Nathan Fillion, which is always a cool thing when he shows up. And then they brought Tim Minear, Jane Espenson, and one of the other actors, Michael Fairman, who was in the original Firefly series. So having all of them on stage to do a Q&A and promote this wonderful cause was so cool. And then to watch the two-hour Serenity movie, it rocked.
Very cool. That's something I'd like to do. We don't get much stuff like that happening around my parts, but that's awesome.
Well, the Can't Stop the Signal Serenity screenings go, I think they did 54 cities this last year.
Oh, wow.
So they should be hopefully closer to your area.
Nice. I'll have to keep on the lookout for that, because Joss's birthday was, what, last week?
Yeah.
This week? I'm not sure. I knew I saw everybody talking about it.
We sang him happy birthday last night. It was a lot of fun.
Very cool. Just a little gossip here that kind of shocked me. Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz, like, now this isn't TV related, but it's enough of import that I feel like we need, like, Tiffany wrote it in her news, and I feel like we do need to discuss it. Where did that come from?
No idea.
Like, I mean, I knew they were dating, and I knew that, I just think it's hysterical that, like, they pulled off a secret wedding. Like, nobody can pull off a secret wedding anymore. It just doesn't happen with the paparazzi and the way it is these days. But surprise, secret wedding. Insane.
That was brilliant. I don't know how they pulled that off. I'm just stunned.
Good for them. And maybe they should give some tips on how to stay out of the limelight to other people so that people don't get sick of them. Jimmy and Ashton.
Talk about a best-selling book. I can see it right now.
And then I just think this is cute, so I want to say it too, because these are two of my favorite people. Troy and Belisario, she's Spencer, from Pretty Little Liars, and Patrick J. Adams, who is Mike from Suits, are adorable, and they're dating, and I love them.
I know.
And I had no idea. I forget they told me that the other day. Somebody told me that. Kurt told me that the other night, because he was talking to Patrick, and I just think that's adorable.
I don't know how they make it work. She's here in L.A. filming Pretty Little Liars, and he's up there in Toronto on Suits, but that's fabulous that they're doing it. Good for them.
I love when my favorite people on TV are dating my other favorite people. Like, I just love that. And then I get really sad when they break up. So hopefully they have a long, healthy
couple.
Yes, and they will have adorable babies. So maybe Spencer will be pregnant so that they can have adorable babies, because I love them.
Spoiler alert.
Still a liar pregnancy.
So that's our news. If you have any other news that you'd like to add, you know where to find it online. Yeah, that's it for news today. We're not going to talk about TV on DVD because there's only really like half seasons and we don't approve. And or Boy Meets World season 6, but really that's kind of a weak season. So you don't need it. So we want to talk prime time a little bit here. Last week's show. So there's a lot of good, I mean, everybody always made the big deal on how summer TV was always kind of so lame, but I feel like summer TV has more going on than some of the stuff that was happening in the spring and the fall, for that record, for you know that point. The
summer
first thing
TV's we got exciting.
Exactly. Suddenly, like my DVRs should, you would not expect them to be full. Like a week of summer, like you would just not expect that, and they are, and I can never get caught up. So Comic Con is going to be horrible because I'm going to be out of my house for a week, and suddenly I'm going to do shows.
DVR is going to explode.
Exactly. It's happened before.
Why haven't they made portable DVRs yet so we can take them with us?
Oh my god, I would love that so much. Should invent that, and then I would never have to work again. So Pretty Little Liars is our first show this week. I don't know the episode number or title. We'll figure that out later. But this show, like, they pack so much story into one episode. It's at the point now where I'm like, are they going to run out of story because they're shoving so much into 1 hour? But I kind of hope they never do, because this show is my, like, I just love it.
I don't know. I think they're smart to have a lot jammed into each episode and keep the audience going, oh my god, there's so much and I'm excited and I got to watch the next episode and they just had this other cliffhanger. It's got the momentum and that's smart.
And they really know how to do a cliffhanger, too, because they, like, some shows are notorious for having a cliffhanger, but then coming back the next episode and it's, like, either already taken care of or we don't focus on that story right away. But Pretty Little Liars, like, something happens, you're on the edge of your seat at the end of an episode, they're going to address it right away in the next week. So it does. Yeah. It makes you like, oh, my God, I have to get there. It has to be 7 days later. And, I mean, I get it, Arya. Like, yeah, he doesn't work at your school anymore, but isn't it? It was an epic kiss. Let's be honest. And I love them. And sure, it's a little weird that she's underage and he's a teacher, but I mean, it's a lot weird. But I still love them and I still root for them. But I feel like kissing in public, I feel like it's going to really come back to bite them.
You got to figure that somebody, namely A, or
somebody, because A knows everything. A knows that Arya's at his house, right?
Got a picture of that. I mean, it was pretty much way at the end of school, sort of. The parking lot was pretty empty, type of thing. But yeah, you were like, I know that he's leaving, so that now they could actually kind of date in public.
But I mean, she's still in high school.
You wouldn't want that to like get out, like.
Yeah.
Now, you'd want that to be like, oh, this happened after. You'd want people to think that it happened after you left, not that's why you left.
Yeah, because it was pretty much an amazing kiss for it to have just been the first time you were on a date. So,
I don't know, I think the question will become whether it's a kiss hello for their new relationship that can be out in the public, or if it's a kiss goodbye, because she's had so many doubts in the last couple episodes about the future of the relationship. Mm. I mean, right. It was epic because it was so passionate, but what's the real intent behind it?
And, like, what happens next?
Yeah.
Right. I also love, Spencer is my favorite character. I just love everything Spencer does, every stupid outfit Spencer wears. Like, I love her. And nothing will make me change my mind, even if she's a little crazy. I mean, whatever. And I don't know, Mona and Hannah, every now and then I like change who I think is A. And for a while there, I was pretty convinced it was going to be Mona. But I don't know. I feel like it's not worth it. It's kind of like The Killing, where I'm going to think I think I know who killed Rosie Larson. And then 12 years later, I'm going to find out A is like, I don't know, like Gossip Girl. We're never going to know who Gossip Girl actually is.
They're never going to tell us.
Yeah, well, I think it's almost kind of like the Gossip Girl thing. Like, it almost becomes a little bit less relevant, except for in this, you know, you keep seeing gloved hands at the end of an episode or...
Right.
You know,
or a tiny dog eating a tiny dog treat.
You know, or all these different things. And so you know that that is important. I mean, they keep it in your face
right.
that there is somebody behind all this stuff. And so, but I think the thing about the show is that it is Vampire Diaries-like in, like you said, the way that they sort of blaze through story. And mm-hmm. within an episode, you know, everything has good pace to it. Everything flows really well. And then they always seem to be able to leave you with something at the end and then come back. And like you said, it's addressed but not necessarily cleared up, you know?
Right.
It's still out there, but it's not, like, forgotten or it's not just tied up. You know, like,
right, exactly.
It wasn't really a big deal, you know, you know, type of thing. Because those, and their ability to be able to sort of like hit that middle continually is pretty impressive. And as I've said before, their ability to keep the creepiness level up of different scenes of who's in the house or who's at the door or who just went through the backyard or all these different things, you know, there's always just, you're never quite sure about anybody.
Exactly. Which I like.
I like talking to see a little bit. They're always foreshadowing something before it happens.
Exactly.
And so you've got that building anticipation, and then your like heart's pounding, and then something does happen, yet it's not quite what you expect. And you're like, what?
Exactly. The show, I hope that it continues to be as obsession-worthy as it is right now. So let's talk about Teen Wolf a little bit. Teen Wolf is perfectly... fine. Like, so this week's episode, we get the new hunter in town who obviously is connected to the girlfriend because you can't have a teen becoming a wolf story without some kind of star-crossed love because, you know, teens become wolves a lot these days. And I really wish that Tyler Hoechlin was the lead character, the guy playing Derek.
It'd be hot.
I just love him. Now listen, as much as I hated Seventh Heaven, and I hated it, I kind of loved hating Tyler Hoechlin when he was on as the guy named Martin who lived at their house. I don't really know why he lived at the house, but he lived at the house for a while.
Because their kids kept leaving and they needed...
I guess. They needed new blood. And then he had like a romantic affair or he was in love with Martha Plimpton for a while. I don't know. It was weird. But I always thought the dude was cute, even when he was dancing in the musical episode with a baseball bat. I just... he's got so much more charisma, I think, than the lead wolf, the teen wolf in question. I don't know. The show's just fine. I'm watching it, and I don't delete it after 5 minutes like I've done with other shows.
Well, I think it's way better than I think anybody thought that it might be. At least it is. At least it's better than I thought it was going to be. But it does sort of set things up, sort of as we've talked previously about Switched at Birth, how pretty much everything that gets set up is exactly how you'd expect it to be. Of course the hunter's going to be the new girl that he just met's father, you know,
right.
and all these types of things, you know. And so it's a little too on the nose with certain things, but I think they're doing a decent job of it. Although I think
they're trying to lower in with their false sense of security. This is not going to be predictable as you think. I think the show is just lowering us in where you think it's going down a predictable pattern, and I think they're going to pull some twist.
Well, I hope so.
They're going to surprise us, I think.
I hope so. I just think that somewhere in these types of shows where similar with the, like, Nine Lives of Chloe King and stuff like that, where all of a sudden you develop some sort of ability. In this case, it's because you were bit by a wolf.
Right.
That once you realize that that is what happened and that you know of somebody else, these ideas that you would just sort of keep, like, it's not really happening. The idea that you wouldn't go to this other person or someplace and be asking, like, all kinds of questions and wanting to know everything that you could about what just happened to you just seems bizarre in these shows. Like, if all of a sudden you were turning into a wolf, you would be like, you wouldn't wait till episode 3 or whatever, which is like weeks later, to be like knocking on Derek's door going, dude, you got to tell me about what's going on.
Or telling Derek, like, you can, we fixed you, you can leave us alone.
Yeah.
No, you can't be left alone because you're a brand new wolf. You have no idea what you're doing and your best friend's an idiot.
Those are the types of things in there that are just like, those are the things that bother me. The same thing in Chloe King, where you're a couple episodes in and you're still like, I'd be questioning these other two my guys.
You know, yeah, I would take everything they say.
I want to know everything. I'm not just happy-go-lucky. But yeah, I think they're doing a pretty good job.
You don't think that's like an adult perspective? I mean, teenagers aren't that necessarily that way. They don't try to be strategic in learning information to be better prepared.
That's true.
Teenagers are always about denial. They don't want to know the bad stuff. They just want to know the good stuff. They don't want to face the reality of the life they might have to be living in. I think it's kind of
in some respects, I think at first, but once you come to the realization that this has happened to you and that there's somebody out to kill you.
Maybe sending Derek home is not a good idea.
That's where the denial ends for me. That's where you go, I need to know stuff now.
Yeah, but teenagers do not have finely honed sense of, like, survival instincts.
They're
they do once they have these special abilities. They
it's
should.
True. I mean, I'm going to keep watching. I think it's better than MTV has done with scripted shows and at least scripted dramas in a while. So see what happens.
Well, I think it's shot very well, though. I think they do a pretty good job on the look of it and stuff like that, too. So
agreed. Definitely. So our next show is Combat Hospital, which I didn't watch, even though it had Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the live-action movies, in it. And I do love Elias Cortez. But I hear I didn't miss much in Combat Hospital.
Well, I might be the exception, but I liked it. But I liked the lead actress so much. She was in The Forgotten with Christian Slater. And I find her compelling.
I liked that show.
And as a female audience member, I'm like, yeah, I want to see where this goes.
I mean, it's not off my radar. I might still check it out. It's kind of one of those...
I don't think it's a guy show.
No?
I may watch another episode to see what they do with it, where it goes or whatever, but as I said to you guys before we started recording, a show set in an emergency hospital in the middle of a war zone, the first episode came off as super boring to me, yet all kinds of stuff happened. And they were up for like 48 hours, and when they, you know, these two doctors first getting there and all this stuff. But I don't know, it just left me bored. Like, and I was like, how do you do this? How do you create a show about these type of doctors in this type of situation? And I'm just not drawn in at all.
Kind of beach kind of thing. It's shown through a female perspective. Your main character is a female, and you're looking at everything the way she does. She was sleep deprived, she was out of her element, and she was worried she was pregnant and ended up not being pregnant. So that's all focused on her internal reactions to this new situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing there to feed into what a guy's looking for. A guy wants to see it through a male perspective. They want to see the snake come in and bite somebody before it gets shot to smithereens. They want to see some bombs actually fall, not just hover it out there in the air strike zone. So I think it's just aimed at a different audience, and females will appreciate it more than a guy will appreciate it just because the viewpoint it's told from.
I mean, I'll check it out. I'll see what I think. I'm not against it. So I think that it's, I think it's maybe something that I could put on like a Saturday afternoon kind of thing. We'll see. How did it do ratings wise? Do we know?
Yeah, it did about 5 million viewers, but they were pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's not bad for, you know, like a Tuesday night show in the middle of the summer. I mean, their Tuesday night dramas in the real season don't do much. I mean, Body of Proof does okay, but like, so that's nothing to scoff at. So good job for them. I mean, kudos to them for doing pretty well with it.
I think
we'll
check it out. Audience. It's a summer show. It's aimed at women. I think it's going to work.
I mean, I think in the same way that Flashpoint kind of landed an audience on CBS, I feel like this is kind of ABC's answer to that. And
exactly.
But in ABC's kind of typical from a female perspective kind of way. So I'll definitely check it out just to kind of, so I'm more informed than just saying, well, how was it? Here's another show I don't watch, but I know people love Covert Affairs. Annie returned to the CIA farm for weapons training. Now, I don't know if it's, I did love the movie Coyote Ugly. And I did like Piper Perabo in that. But something about this, I just didn't have any interest in starting to watch it, so I never caught up on it. But I know a lot of people do love it. So how was this week's
episode? Here's two words for you on why you need to catch up. You need to catch up only for Chris Gorham.
I do love him.
Whenever he takes his shirt off, because they learned that every time they take the shirt off, they get a rating spike. So he's been doing a lot of reading, and it's worth it.
I do love Chris Gorham. I do, very much.
He brings a lot of energy and life and just humor to the show, where it could have just gotten totally dragged down to a dark, murky kind of CIA story, and it's managed to elevate it and make it more fun and interesting. It's kind of worth giving it a chance.
I always say I'll get caught up, and I never do.
I like this last episode and the previous one more than the second season premiere episode. This one had her going, you know, undercover back where she was pulled out of originally before she actually finished to find out who was leaking names of CIA recruits. And I like the way that the episode went down. I like these episodes that have the action sort of takes place with, you know, trying to sneak into some place, or there might be a little bit of hand-to-hand combat or something, or when they try and go for bigger elements. We talked about previously on about the premiere episode, when they go for some of the bigger action chase scenes and stuff like that, they don't always come off as well. I think some of these smaller situations, they do a really good job with that, and her and Chris Gorham, they play really well off of each other, and this was another episode where it revolved around those two a lot, having to work together, even with him coming out from behind the computer and stuff like that to be out in the field as well.
I think they've discovered that's the secret of their success on the show, is that relationship, even though it's not romantic, they play off each other character-wise so well, it makes whatever the other story is a little more exciting to watch. So they've been playing with that more, and it's smart.
I'm happy to hear that it sounds like, and it sounds like for the long run too, they're going to be best friends. Like, they're not going to explore a relationship between these two characters.
Well, they got all the time in the world. They wouldn't want to rush that one.
Exactly. Like, I'm glad that they're not going to, just because it's a guy and a girl working together, there has to be unrequited, like, sexual feelings or whatever. So I'm glad.
Now,
they've got
four other love interests for the main character of Annie. They don't have time to pursue a fifth one.
They have four. Oh, my God. I love it.
It's four. I mean, they got to go through four love interests. It's going to take them a while.
Love it. So I'll check it out. I mean, I always say that I will, and I have them. Like, I have some DVDs of it, and I have some recorded. I'll catch up eventually. It'll happen. It'll happen, I promise people.
You'll enjoy it when you do, hopefully before Comic-Con, because they're going to be at Comic-Con.
Yes, they are. So maybe I might skip that so I don't look like I don't know what I'm talking about. Note to self. So here's another USA show we want to talk about, Burn Notice. This is the season 5 premiere. I know this one was called Company Man because I wrote that. Well, Courtney wrote that in her review. I just love Michael Weston. I do. I just love him. Even when he's not exactly
like... Did you not feel a little sad during this episode? It felt like a sad episode.
It did. It kind of... It felt like, you know, because he's kind of exploring the whole options of working, you know, that door's finally open a little bit for the CIA, and what does that mean for his group, for his friends, for kind of what he's built in Miami? It does. There's kind of an underlying depression to it.
Well, he got exactly what he wanted. He found the guy that burned him. The guy's dead. He's got to go back to what life. He hasn't figured it out yet. And it seems kind of sad that he's actually thinking of moving on without his friends.
I mean, especially, you know, he and Fee, I think they're the be-all, end-all, obviously. But I don't know. It's right. Like, how does he just suddenly... It's kind of like we were talking about White Collar a little bit and how Neil has... You know, suddenly he's like, okay, yes, this will be the last thing. I want to get out of here. But he's built such a relationship with these people that it's like, how can he even think of going somewhere without Peter and the gang? And it's kind of the same idea for Michael. Like, how can he even think of, yes, I know, like, what he wanted most of all is done, and he's gotten that satisfaction of knowing that he knows who burned him. Still, it's like, how can you move past it and forget all your friends?
This is the joyless Michael. And you're like, really? I want to see you happy and enjoying life. And you got exactly what you wanted, and you're depressed. It was pretty disorientating.
He didn't get exactly what he wanted, but
he got close to what he wanted.
The thing about this episode, though, is while the middle part of it with them on the job and trying to get to this guy and stuff like that, while that was all good and fun to watch, the episode as a whole sort of fell flat for me. As in, you've had four seasons of this whole build-up, and they ended last season, you know, in such a way where he was finally going to have a shot at really finding all these people that were part of this group that was headed up by this guy that burned him, and to find out why he was burned.
He kind of answered that question. He was the perfect tool. They just did it because they could, and they got away with it.
You know, but then it ends up being all the takedowns of all these other people and stuff like that are all sort of done off screen. They show you little clips of this went down in Seattle, and this went down here, and this went down there, and this is the last one, and if we can just break this guy, can find out maybe where, you know, the guy at the top is. And I didn't expect, like, this season, because budgetary wise they wouldn't necessarily be able to, I guess they could try and make Miami and different areas or whatever try and look like they went to various places like they did for going to you know, out of the country in this episode. Mm-hmm. But I guess that would be harder to do it multiple times. So I didn't necessarily expect, like, this season to be all about him tracking down one person after the next, you know, on this list that they had. But I also didn't necessarily expect it to just, like, all be done by the time this season started. And then for him to not get, I think it leaves it in an interesting place, like, what is going to be next for him. But it also sort of just sort of fell flat after, unless the next episode gives you a good reason for what all this was. I kept waiting for a twist. Like, it turns out that the guy that they thought was at the top wasn't really at the top or something.
Right.
And there never was that other thing. I mean, I was even thinking, like, there was somebody else in that safe room, and there was another way out of it or something like that, that they were going to go with, that not that he shot himself, but that somebody else shot him and then snuck away before they blew the place up to get in and stuff. Who knows? I had all these different things as the ending was going down, as what was, and then it just ended up where they played it off as that was the end. He shot himself. Michael's not going to know, but now he's sort of back in, and, or, you know, could be. What will he do? And if that's where it ends, that seems like, unless they do something really well, like I said, in the next couple episodes, that just seems like such a letdown after four seasons of all that stuff.
I don't know. I didn't.
This is the beginning of the season. I'm sure they're setting something up, and we just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see.
That's the thing, is you would think they leave you with something. The only thing they leave you with sort of is, will he go back, or
I think kind of
will
at
he
this
stay
point,
type of thing. They didn't hint at anything in this episode as there might be something bigger still out there, or something else.
Well, the show's in its fifth season, like you pointed out. Like, they don't need to draw. I mean, they do want to get, you know, they always want to get more viewers or whatever, but they're not at the point where they need to do something that's going to draw someone in right away. Because for the most part, the people that are watching now are the people that are going to keep watching. So it's just kind of one of those things where you stuck with it to this point. They kind of trust that you'll stick with it through. And I think that we'll see more as it goes. But that brings us to our other Thursday night on USA show, Suits. Big premiere for them, 4.5 million. And I don't know, what did everybody think? I liked it.
I liked that show. My number one favorite show of the summer so far. Loved it.
I mean, everything about Gabriel Macht, like, I love that guy. And I've loved him. He's been a favorite for a long time. But I feel like this role was just waiting for him, and it's like, yes, he's finally playing something that he can kind of like just totally shine at. And I mean, who doesn't love Patrick Adams?
Oh, they're so cute.
I know. I just, the two of them, they know how to wear suits. Like, Harvey Specter just looks, you know, Gabriel Mock looks amazing in a suit. Like, he was born to wear a suit. And Rick Hoffman, you know, doing his there to be a creepy mean dude thing that he always does.
He looks like he's having so much fun at it.
Exactly. It's like he's pretty much making a living at this point being a jerk and being obnoxious, and everybody loves him for it. My one concern...
He's having fun at it.
I know. My one concern is that I want... I mean, I always feel like this for her, but I want more for Gina Torres. Like, I always feel like this. I just want to see her branch out and get, like, a huge chunk of story, and I hope that this season we're going to get some more, we're going to get information about her character and not just have her be, like, the heavy who can control Harvey.
Yeah, but I think this show's all about gamesmanship. It's all about everybody's got a game they want to play, and I think Gina Torres also, as Jessica, has her own little game she's playing. So I think we're watching a chess match. It'll be fascinating.
I mean, I'm already, like, drawn in, and a couple people said, you know, oh, the pilot just felt so long, but to me it was, like, the complete opposite. I didn't even realize it was an extended episode. To me, it just felt like, because I watched it ahead of time and watched it without commercials. So to me, I was just, that didn't seem like it was too long. It didn't take too long to set things up. And sure, you know, the guy's really smart. So it was predictable that he'd find his way into the one room in the whole hotel that's going to get him out of the cops or whatever and get him a job and all this stuff. But that's the setup of the story. You need to have that to happen. But I just felt like it was fresh. They had great bro chemistry. You know, they felt very Peter and Neil or Sam and Michael, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really liked it. The only reason I sort of noticed that it was an extended episode, I didn't know that it was an extended episode.
Yeah.
And I started watching it, though, one night before I had to go to work. And then I realized that it was getting, that I should have had plenty of time to watch it before I left. And all of a sudden I needed to leave, and it wasn't over yet. But I thought the extended episode worked better. I think I wish more shows, especially some of the cable shows, that they had more freedom to do some of these a little bit long. Because sometimes you get I'll go back to the Nine Lives of Chloe King. I think that show would have worked better if the first episode was longer than the 40 minutes that you get inside that hour.
Right.
I think they needed to give the audience more information. And I liked this episode. I thought you got enough information about all of the characters, plus an interesting case that showed where these two type of guys sort of come from and what they're like. And I thought it did a really good job of setting up everything you needed to go into the next episode. I didn't feel like there was still... Obviously, there's still stories to tell, and I still want to watch these guys in those stories. But I didn't feel like I needed to know more about them necessarily, you know, like,
right,
to keep going. I felt like everybody was introduced well. And, you know, pilots are difficult because the job is to introduce them but also be entertaining. And I thought that they found that mesh pretty well most of the time.
Agreed.
I'm looking forward to more. Like I've said before, any time you take a character that is sort of brilliant, you know, off the charts smart, but then you put them in an interesting place to give them an interesting way to use their ability. I'm always interested in those type of shows. Those are, those type of shows always draw me in.
I think it's going to be...
It introduced a lot of emotional elements, which is unusual for that kind of show early on, which made you a little more interested in these characters, opposed to just going, oh, they're too hardened criminal kind of type, trying to pull a con on everybody. Instead, we got to see kind of their sensitive side, their vulnerability, and that made us intrigued as to what's going on here. Where are they going with this?
Yeah, that's why I think the extendedness of it worked.
Exactly.
Is they had time to do some of that stuff. And really, I think if you looked at the actual runtime of the episode, you know, it's not like super extended. It's pretty well extended over what an episode is nowadays, which is like 40 or 41 minutes. A lot of episodes are down to sub 43 minutes in how much actual show there is in that hour. And so the show is actually closer to being like 55 minutes or something like that. So it was almost like doing like a really old school drama where they used to have 55 minutes in an hour to do a TV show.
USA just, they know what they're doing. they don't greenlight a show unless they know that it's going to be something worth watching. Or they know going in that, yes, there might be a few things we need to tweak, but we'll get there and we'll fix it. Like, they just produce such good shows. I think the same way that, like, FX does. They just, everything, I just enjoy it. Everything that I've watched on both networks, like, I love them. And I think this is just another one that's going to be another long-running show for them that I completely understand why. It just works.
They definitely seem to have built a platform for bringing in ideas and seeking out ideas and filtering through and picking the ones.
Yeah.
The ones that they finally air. Whatever system they have set up.
It's working. They should keep using it.
Yeah, they should definitely keep using it. And, yeah, and, like, FX kind of has that, too, with the, especially with their dramas. They, they tend to be not necessarily always as well received in the general audience.
Right.
But very seldom do you get a lot of shows where they're not at least thought to be good shows, just for some reason aren't able to get an audience.
Right. They do it well. So we have one more show on our primetime list tonight, Rookie Blue, which I watched the premiere and maybe second episode last season, but I stopped because I don't know if it was too much on or no, I never really thought it was, like, terrible. It was something I could probably pass the time and watch. But I thought, hey, I have the premiere. I might as well watch it. So, obviously, I had no idea what had happened between, like, episodes 3 and the end of the season last year. So, color me surprised when there's Andy, like, dancing around in her boyfriend's house that she's living in. Like, I had no idea that had happened. But I think, and you know that she wasn't fooling around with that guy anymore, who I don't think they had, she had actually, the undercover cop from the pilot, like, I don't think that they had even started having feelings for each other. Whatever. It was a really well done premiere. Didn't even know what had happened leading into it, but still I was confronted with the fact that it was actually really well done. And Missy Peregrim, I'm glad that she's on a show that's kind of succeeding.
I think it was exciting. I mean, the entire episode was exciting from the minute you walked into it to the very end, and you kind of wished it hadn't stopped because you were very curious to see where now the dynamics of this kind of quartet of relationship is now going to go. Plus
right.
The ramifications of Andy being shot, even though it hit her in the vest, it left the emotional toll of that. I mean, fascinating to watch throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a usually a show in a second season where I haven't watched the first season, but I'm suddenly like, you know, okay, I got the screener, I might as well check it out. Usually I don't find myself saying, maybe I should go back and catch up and then go forward and watch it. But I kind of did with this, and I think that that's a good sign. I feel like the show definitely improved from when I first started watching it to, you know, now. So it's maybe back on my list of things to catch up on it.
Oh, it's worth it. It's a lot of fun.
And I love Gregory Smith. Can't really go wrong with that guy.
Well, they've been expanding all the different characters, so that even though, like, all the other cadets that are still doing a little bit of the training, they've now formed their own identities and relationships, so we've got storylines that involve them as well. It's not just about Andy, which is good.
Right.
Well, I watched the first couple episodes of last season as well, and I just couldn't get into it. It sort of had the polish of a good TV show, but not quite the writing or the acting. Everything wasn't exactly coming together, and nobody really drew me in. And so I dropped off watching it, but I did watch the first episode of season 2, and I felt very much the same as when I watched the first episode of season 1, is while what takes place is different, and Andy is farther along in, you know, her life than where she was just starting out as an officer. The episode plays very much the same, with her ending up in the place that takes down the guy at the end of the episode, and none of it interested me. None of it got, and it didn't feel any better as in the way that it was put together and stuff like that than it was in the early of the first season. So
we will all agree to disagree.
I'm on the other side of the spectrum on the old Rookie Blue.
On the old Rookie Blue.
I think we just start taking the shows that are shown through the story of your protagonist is a female. I mean, the show really does revolve around the female viewpoint simply because your main character is female and it's about her experiences with the people around her.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's not drawing in the male audiences easily.
In some respects, obviously, the show is more that direction audience-wise in what it's probably going after and looking for. But yet, I watch an amazing amount of shows that are not geared towards me that I'm very interested in and are very compelling.
This just happens to be one you're not. It happens.
There's an immense amount, I've mentioned this before, there's an odd amount of shows based on Teen Chick Lit that I watch. It is very strange.
I think the difference in those shows, and like pointing it out, like Pretty Little Liars, Vampire Diaries, they kind of have a mythology, a science fiction almost, and they are fronted by females, but they have more of a mythology, a thing that you're kind of drawn to with a cop show or a doctor show, like, you know, Combat Hospital, Rookie Blue. There's not that mythology, so perhaps a female-based
except
story.
That I like Grey's Anatomy and Desperate Housewives and Body of
Proof. I didn't
know
anybody liked Desperate Housewives anymore.
Well, I mean, from the beginning, you know, in the beginning of them and stuff like that. But those are all shows that are geared and all have female leads. And so I think you can do both. I think you can create a compelling enough show that's done well enough.
Yeah, well.
Obviously, Flashpoint is more from going after a more male demographic than, but it's just done really well.
Yeah. And I don't watch
and storytelling and writing is a lot better.
To you. Maybe not to others like me, because I don't watch Flashpoint. So there you have it. So that's prime time for the week. Prime time. I did want to talk a little bit about some reality, because I'm watching a surprising number of reality competition series, but I don't tend to, aside from maybe The Real Housewives of New Jersey, I don't tend to watch like the just put people on camera type shows. But So You Think You Can Dance, so this week four people went home. I'm actually okay with two of the four. Yvetta I didn't like, and Missy I didn't like, so I'm happy to see that they went, but I was bummed that it was at the expense of their partners, because I think Wadi could have gone pretty far, and I liked Nick. MasterChef continues to be interesting. I don't care that they faked camera people on camera, like they did some camera trickery so that it would look like more people were at the auditions. I don't care. The show's still fun. And, I mean, there's not much that really happened this week on any of the shows that are worth watching. I do want to point out Expedition Impossible. Yeah, sure. It's The Amazing Race in Morocco with three people. But I love The Amazing Race, so I kind of love that competition, travel, beautiful shots, and arguing family type shows. So I enjoyed it, so I'm going to be watching it.
I want to know if you're super excited for tonight's Food Network star.
I'm always excited for tonight's Food Network star. Is Rachel Ray on?
No, you saw who they're cooking for, didn't you?
Is it Cougartown tonight?
Yeah, they're cooking for the Cougartown cast tonight.
I am, because and then you see like the clips, because we watch like the preview clips, and everybody on the cast looks like they're making a face like, what the hell am I eating? Like, nobody looked impressed. So that always makes me happy, too, because I like to see, like, that. I like to see when people fail. I don't really like anybody. Like, I don't have a favorite yet on the show on Food Network Star, so maybe tonight we'll change that. I always go into an episode thinking, okay, maybe someone will stand out as someone I actually want to win. Right now, it's not happening. I kind of hope they all lose. But I know that's not possible either. So there you have it. So that's kind of reality for the week. I think that's it for us, TV talking-wise. We want to thank Tiffany for joining us.
All right, thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely, and we'll hope to have her again as we continue our rotating guest star list here. We'll see everybody in Comic-Con in, like, 20-something days. Freaking out. I mean, you hope you'll see me in Comic-Con,
yeah,
because I'm...
If you get that plane ticket.
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm just going to have to bite the
I'll
bullet.
See Tiffany there.
There's no guarantees about Emery. No guarantees about Emery yet, but we're thinking she'll be there.
Once this episode's out, it'll be like a couple weeks before the next episode's out. Not till like probably the middle of July. And Sandy from Damon's TV will be joining us then.
Returning guest star Sandy.
Sandy's a darling.
Love Sandy.
We love having her.
She's a good one. We'll see you at Comic-Con, I'm sure, too. So we can all gather and chat more then. Our music, as always, was provided by IODA PromoNet. The song is TV Party by the Asylum Street Spankers from their Mercurial title, put out by Yellow Dog Records. Yes. Every time I get through that without stumbling, I feel really happy inside.
Me too.
So, you know where to find us. We're on tvtimes3.com. Spell it all out. Twitter, iTunes, all the places Jason mentioned last week that I don't remember. And happy birthday to Jason this week. I'm correct in saying that, right?
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Jason's birthday is this week, so by the time this is out, it'll probably have passed. So make sure you just keep saying happy birthday to him, because you may have missed it. I saw that reminds me of a birthday card I saw today when I was looking for one for my brother. It's unrelated, but it is related because it was about like this little girl on the front. She was like a really annoying looking little kid. Like she looked like the kid you would like in the neighborhood not want to associate with because she was selling you Jolly Ranchers for 25 cents or something. She looked annoying. And on the front of it, it says like, "Sorry, I missed your birthday." And on the inside, it was like, "But I'm so cute, you just have to forgive me." And I was really bothered by this annoying child with this card. I felt so like an old lady. Like, that kid looks annoying. Anyway, that just reminded me of that. So what a great way to end this conversation with an annoying child selling Jolly Ranchers, which, true story, happens in my parents' neighborhood all the time. Some little girl knocks on their door and offers to sell them the Jolly Ranchers she just bought for 25 cents. What a life. But you know what? I wish I was still in the summer where I was selling Jolly Ranchers to my neighbors. Whatever. Thank you again for joining us. And now I'm off to eat some kind of raspberry pork or something that my brother requested. I have no idea. I'm a little nervous about it. I'm sure it'll be fine. I went for frozen yogurt today, everybody. So that's important, too. Awesome. Frozen yogurt is my favorite thing on the planet. So
looking now forward to Pinkberry, are you?
You know, I gotta be honest. I'm not really looking forward to Pinkberry unless they open a yogurt land in downtown San Diego. Then I'd be happy. Because I don't love Pinkberry as much as I love self-serve frozen yogurt. And once again, on the wonderful note of frozen yogurt, I bid you adieu.
Okay.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
We sit glued to the TV set all night.
And every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
Such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.